Thank you so much for that piece. Ooh. So love never fails. That's 1 Corinthians 13. That's Paul's way of talking about it. John talks about it in terms of a vine that abides, that remains, that stays connected to its source, the love, the abiding love of God. So there's the comfort. And then there's the challenge part. Clip, clip, clip. The gardener comes and sees branches that aren't good anymore for anything. At one time, they were beautiful. They were abundant. They were full of richness and meaning. But now that time has passed, and the gardener rather unceremoniously clips them. Off they go. And then on the other side, there are other branches that are actually alive and growing, doing good things, could go places, but there's this pruning, clip, 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 unceremoniously again. So I want to ask the two of you, do you see any connections between that passage and those images and the contemporary church from your ministries?
Not it.
Well, yeah, so I think, I mean, one of the things, just in terms of deeply abiding, right? So when we started Cathedral of the Beloved, 3 years ago, you know, to step out of the church walls in such a radical way takes, it's a leap of faith, right? Like, Cathedral is really unpredictable every week, right? It's not like your standard liturgy that we have here or that I was trained in, right? Where while we have a liturgy, you know, of the word, and so things do follow a prescribed manner, you know, things can happen in a moment's notice. Someone might feel really moved to share a story in a particular moment. And so there's a lot of flexibility. So in all of that, there is an invitation to deeply abide in God's love and the movement of the Spirit. And that's that is both an invitation and a challenge. But in those moments, there's great, where there's great risk, there can also be great reward because of the vulnerability that is often shared in love.
And Tim, do you want to describe a little bit of what you've actually done at Zion for all those of us who don't know?
Yes. So if Jenny is here as the pastor of the church without walls, we're the church that only has walls. Or something like that. So I serve as pastor at Zion Lutheran Church over on First Street. And about a year ago, we finished a major renovation remodel that included removing 49 pews from the sanctuary. It did a lot of other things, but I think one of the reasons that you wanted me up here was to talk about that specifically, which is a different way of existing as church within a sanctuary, as a place of worship. It struck me, Jenny, when you were talking about how worship at Cathedral can be different every week, and you don't know quite what to expect. There is a shade of similarity, even over at Zion now, that on Sunday mornings when I come in at 8 o'clock in the morning, I didn't leave the house till 9 this morning. It was great. But when I come in at 8 o'clock in the morning, I don't really know what I'm going to find. Some chairs might be out of place. The baptismal font could be... Who knows where the baptismal font is? I don't know where it is. A plant could be who knows where. There could be a big pile of just dirt and dust on the floor or something like that. And I try to dutifully, like, hide that from my congregation. So I, like, quick get in with the Swiffer and, like, clean it all up so they'll never know that. But the reality is that in a place without sort of fixed furniture, you know, this room that we're in right now is going to look pretty much the same when you come in on Sunday morning, and we don't know what we're going to expect. And I think we have some camaraderie there, of a sort of dynamism. It keeps us on our toes, to say the least.
Well, and if you were a vine with a gardener with a pair of snippers, it would kind of keep you on your toes in one sense or another.
Right.
Yeah. And thinking about it for a moment, in terms of these downtown, wonderful downtown congregations, these buildings that build on the symbolism that we've had in our Christian tradition of kind of God is omnipotent and omniscient and omnipresent and all those things that are unchanging. The church often has tried to embody that in these buildings and pews or traditions that are unchanging. We want to use, some folks still want to use the King James Version. You know, it's like we have these unchanging things. But the Gospel of John, and if you read the scriptures with any care, everything's always changing because what God is love. And love isn't static. Love is changing. And so John is talking about the pruning, not saying God, the gardener, likes to cause suffering, but that when you deal in a world, when you have love as your vision, it inevitably entails some suffering. Because that's just, in this reality, love and suffering go together, not out of any self-hatred. It's just, you love and you hurt. Things happen. And that's usually around change. And so you guys have both embarked on a lot of change, and we're all embarking on a lot of change, and it's painful. And you have to abide in something. And so, can you say, what are you abiding in this time of change? Piles of dust, and who hit the baptismal font?
It's sneaky.
What's that?
It's sneaky.
It's sneaky.
I'm thinking.
Yeah. A quick story. So one of my parishioners this week over at Zion Lutheran Church told me that, or asked me if I would go out and find her a large print Bible. Funny enough, I learned something this week, that if you go out and buy a large print Bible, if you know anything about fonts, that's like font size like 10. Because most Bibles you see are like really, really tiny print. So she didn't want a large print Bible. She actually wanted what they call a super giant print Bible. No joke. And so I'm like, oh yeah. I've got Amazon on my side. I'm going to take care of that. So I go out and I looked at Amazon and went to Barnes & Noble, a couple of places. And if you want to get a super giant print Bible for anything less than like $60 or $70, it's going to be in King James. Yeah, things that make you go, hmm. And so when you mention the King James as sort of a litmus test, it's interesting that there are things that are being held on to. That, you know, there's a certain, of course, anyone of a certain age that wants a super giant print Bible must be looking for the King James Version, right? I don't actually think that's true. I think that's what Barnes & Noble would like everyone to believe. Sorry, Barnes & Noble. But I think the reason I tell that story is that we get into this habit of saying, like, either the church has to be completely immovable or so changeable that we've gotten rid of everything that matters. Mm. This, like, sort of toxic dualism, right? Mm. And it's like, why can't it be both? Mm. I was reading the couple guys... Oh, what are their names? Chip Heath? Does that ring a bell to anyone? Chip Heath? Dan Heath? No. They wrote a book called Decisive, which is how to make decisions. And one of the things that they talk about in this book is how too many people, and I would include myself in this, go down the road of, if we have to make a decision, it's always either or. Mm. We're always picking between two things, tradition or too much change. Pews or chairs, church inside the walls, church outside the walls, money for buildings, money for mission. And we can actually do all of those things. It just takes more work. Mm. And so I think when you ask the question of what do I abide in a presence of a spirit that compels me to do both. Mm. That if it's one or the other, I'm not doing it right.
That's really cool. That's in the story, because, you know, the gardener comes to clip, but the point isn't to clip. The point is to grow and to set energy free. And so you have the kind of going beyond, does it stay or does it go, to a deeper vision of, well, whatever I do, how does this help the plant, the vine, grow? Which is the vision question. And you're abiding then in a deeper vision that helps with those decisions. That's very cool.
I have stories all day. Is Lynn Robertson here? Yes, Lynn's here. Is Helen Kimple here? Are you scared yet? So a couple of... So like 7 years ago, Lynn Robertson gave me this Christmas cactus. Do you remember that? Giving me this Christmas cactus that like never grew ever. Well, I didn't water it. And every time she'd come into my office, she'd say, wow, that looks terrible. And it really did. And then, like, I don't know, a couple months ago, Helen came into my office and like, you should really trim that. And I was like, what? And she said, you should really trim off a bunch of the branches. And my goodness, if that thing hasn't grown leaps and bounds in the last month,
yes.
I invite you all, one at a time, into my office, and you can see how much that has grown. Mm. So much new, bright green growth.
Someone with a vision for what could be.
Right.
That's cool. Jenny.
And I think in that same vein, when we're about the work of kind of seed planting, thinking about that theme a little bit, you know, we never know what we plant, how it's going to take root or blossom along the way. And so speaking of stories, this week I went to somebody's house at the Y to do a house blessing, which was really, really powerful in and of itself. But as I was walking with a volunteer of Cathedral through the halls, we were rounding a corner, and we both looked at each other at the same time. And a year ago at Cathedral, we had done a reflection on Jacob wrestling with the angel. And we had made name tags in that process that said God Wrestler on it as a way of expressing that it's okay to wrestle with God. It's okay to have questions. And so as we were rounding the corner, there on right below the peephole of somebody's door was that name tag, God Wrestler. Mm. Right? And that was well over a year ago. And so, you know, in this idea of, you know, what do I abide in, right? I abide in the fact that God is going to continue to show up, right? Mm. That God is bigger than any one of us, and that God will continue to do what God has already always done, which is show up and be present to God's people wherever we gather.
And one sign of that can be a little name
Absolutely.
Tag on a door at the Y.
That's right.
God is here. Well, this story, these images from John, especially, they're vivid and they're very simple, and so they're deceptive. Like, well, we get it. It's kind of done. But once you go into them, they go and they go and they go. And so one thing I thought of with this story is, so I wonder how this pruning feels to the vine. Because the vine, it's kind of like each of us is the vine. All of us together are the vine. What's it like to get clipped? And how do we experience it? And if you're the vine, how do you tell the difference between dead wood getting cut off or live wood being cut? And so it got me thinking that question to myself of, well, where would I experience dead wood in myself? Which then is like, well, where are the places in me where I go numb? And there's no feeling. And those places tend to be places where I'm overwhelmed, or I'm exhausted, or tired, or just there's just too much, and so I just go numb. And in a sense, that's me cutting parts of myself off. And it's interesting, when I followed that thought for a minute, of especially when I'm having to work, it's like what tends to happen is when I go numb, I get very task-oriented. Like the box, to the box, to the box, to the box. Just get me through. You know, how much more is there to do today? Bum, 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 bum. And the numbness kind of carries me. But what happens is the feelings don't go away. They kind of circle around, and I have a really high tendency to become irritable or edgy or whatever, because I'm numb, but the feelings are still there. And I'm wondering, in some of our church meetings where we make decisions, and when we kind of get really task-oriented, which is important, but if we're all feeling a little overwhelmed by all the changes, do you ever have times in your meetings where people get a little edgy or irritable and the decisions get a little testy?
Never.
Never? I know. I was hoping I was the fall in my head. I was hoping it would, no. would connect, because it seemed like that's right where I went. Yeah. 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 And so then John offers give us a choice. You know, it can be dead wood, you try to cut off and you numb and then it doesn't go to good places, or you can own up to the fact that you're feeling and it still gets cut. And how does it when I'm having feelings and there's a loss, then the word I connect with is grief. There's sadness, there's grief. And I don't like that, so it tends to push me the other way. But I think John's saying, stick with that. Stay with that. Stay with that, because it can, because it's alive. It's a pruning. It's not because it's dead. It's because it's like the birth pangs of new life. Mm-hmm. But it's a hard choice to stay with that because it hurts. Mm-hmm. And so how do we stay with that? And since you're a mom, you might have some insights into this.
One day at a time. I think what you're getting at, Joel, is naming the gift and the challenge of being vulnerable, right? Like, and as a church, like, we're not always very good at being vulnerable. I mean, sometimes we're really good at it, but sometimes it's harder, right? That's one of the things I've come to appreciate about being outdoors, is the willingness of people to consistently be vulnerable, which has really pushed me in terms of my own growth. Where was I going? And so I think, you know, I think in those settings, to be able to name, there's permission giving that happens, I think. And so when we're able to name that this is really hard for us, whatever pruning we're working through, and we're able to name our own pain in that moment, our own grief, it's permission giving, because what it does is it frees the energy in the room of everyone else who's having that same feeling to say, you know what, I'm feeling this too. And maybe we can sit with this together. And so it moves us from a place of isolation to a place of deeper community. Mm.
Which kind of goes with the lesson.
Absolutely.
Intimacy,
right.
And oneness, yep. Abiding, finding your home, one in another. Yeah. So how's the grief been like with pews? That's a challenging one.
Had to ask that,
didn't
you?
I'm sorry. But it just feels like such alive, and letting people grieve, you know, letting that this hurts, you know, change a magnitude or just change of such a tradition is like it's a live thing, and yet it hurts, and yet if we can do this and feel it all together and feel the hurt, then it can lead to deeper things. I mean, it feels very related to, you know, the death of my brother years ago, and I tried for many, many years just to not talk about it. But it was when I could. It hurts, and I can't bring him back. You know, we can't bring the pews back. We can't bring the great times of the 50s back. So, but we don't want to lock it away. We want to bring the pain with us, because actually, my brother has added immensely to my life. And I sort of envision the church, if we could do in a similar thing of bringing the pain with us, it could actually be extremely fruitful, which feels to me what you've exactly done, Tim and Zion.
Thank you. I'm trying to wrap a few things together in my head, and I can't can't quite get there. But there, one of the things that I've heard you talk about just in the last few minutes is, you know, this difference between sort of technical problems and the fancy word is adaptive problems. So the technical stuff is things we can fix instantly. You know, Zion Lutheran Church knows all about technical problems like boilers. that has not been an easy fix, but that is a technical problem, right? Yeah. As opposed to larger adaptive problems in terms of what to do with a 25,000 square foot building that can hold 1,500 people, which is the size of a small cruise ship, which has an average worship attendance of 70 to 80 people. You know, that's an adaptive question.
Yeah.
And so we with a capital W, tend to go for the technical problems because they're so much easier. They involve less grief, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if we go for an adaptive problem, there's going to be grief that's involved. There can be a tremendous amount of grief. No, I'm going to go back on that. I'm going to say there is a tremendous amount of grief anytime we talk about our buildings.
Mm.
Because there's such history there. History maybe with a lowercase h and a capital H of memories and institutions and possibilities that were never realized and hopes that were never quite finished. And so when we talk about the larger question of the building, whether you're sort of renovating it completely or you don't have one, God bless you. anything related to the building with a capital B is an adaptive question.
Mm.
It's always going to be hard.
Mm.
And one of the things that I'm exceptionally proud of my congregation that I serve about is that they were willing to have that conversation. They've been having it for a long time because it's always going to be hard. There's no way to have an easy conversation about a building.
Mm.
And if I'm not talking to my colleagues in this room, I'm saying if there's a pastor out there anywhere that thinks, oh yeah, actually I know someone like this, who's like, yeah, we're going to like have this conversation, we're going to like fix the boiler and update a couple of things, and you know, the project's going to cost like $100,000 and we're going to be done in 6 months, and I just laughed at him. Because it's always going to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
And how many times, so you ask the question about the plant and how the plant feels. I want to know how many times the pruner has set down the pruning shears before she finally went for it. That's the statistic that I want to know.
Yeah.
No. Not today. Not this year. Not this decade. That's what's interesting to me.
Mm. Mm. And the gardener, when he or she does cut, has a vision, good gardener, has a vision. And you wonder if sometimes the gardener is crying when the cut comes. Does God cry with us in these times of change? And if God is crying with us and entering into the change in vulnerability, does that give us hope, vision for the immensity of the sea, the immensity that will get us through all this? Because at the end of the first century, the early church wasn't, where is this going? Is this kind of petering out? Is this dying? And John, the gospel writer, said, well, it may be cut. Or if you can lean into the vulnerability, the grief, the change, the obstacles, and Paul would call it childbirth, which I've heard is one of the most worst pain you can have. If you can lean into that, then new life comes. But it is, as you say, Tim, it's painful. And so I sort of imagine God not as a happy-go-lucky guard, but I like that. No, not today, not, and accompanied by tears.
I have to ask Jenny a question.
Please.
You can you know, talk amongst yourselves. Did you go to that conference at Yale a few weeks ago?
No, but I wanted to.
Yeah. No. Okay. So Jenny and I are both alums of Yale Divinity School. We were classmates basically at the same time.
Yeah.
And there was a conference down at Yale Divinity School a few weeks ago called Church 2020, Church 21st Century.
Yeah.
Church.
It's about. It
2.0,
was kind of a, like
know.
The next wave of what that might look like,
right.
Essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. So I didn't go, but I know someone who did.
Okay.
And there, this person's reflection, who I won't name him, said that, you know, here's this church conference about like how the church is going to move into the 21st century. And it took 3 days for anyone to say anything positive. You know, think about that for a second. Mm. Here we are talking about the future of the church, and there's two full days of negativity of the church. Well, it isn't what it used to be. Well, there's not enough people. Yeah. But then, finally, on the third day, someone went up to the podium and said, you know what? I think the best days of the church are still in front of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And it hit everyone like a ton of bricks. Mm. It's like, finally.
Yeah.
And I would like to espouse that vision.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
For Zion Lutheran Church, for all the churches gathered here, for Pittsfield, that our best days are still ahead of us. Mm-hmm. That's how the gardener's feeling, right?
Mm, mm.
Because if the gardener didn't feel that, why prune the plant?
Exactly.
Just let it die.
Yes.
The gardener prunes because the dark gardener feels that the plant's best days are still ahead of it.
And there was this other event where there was 2 days of darkness, and then on the third day, somebody rises from the dead.
And so maybe they were just really smart and they planned it that way.
But crucifixion and resurrection go together, and so we have to enter the pain, and then a new day comes, and love never fails. And with that, we can keep going for the rest of the day, but let's sing. And thank you both so much. Amen.